Leadership in America. What does it look like? Do you trust it? What makes for great leaders in tumultuous times? These are some of the questions we'll be asking on tomorrow's program as we focus on the topic of leadership, the series of conversations I had at the Aspen Ideas Festival last week. Today, we'll bring you one piece of that coverage. While in Aspen, I sat down with Deborah Fallows, a linguist and contributor to The Atlantic, and her husband, James Fallows, a national correspondent for The Atlantic. Their new book is Our Towns, a 100,000-mile journey into the heart of America.
So this was actually 2013 when we first revved up the plane and headed out to get the pulse, to talk to the people, to see what was going on in the non-big coastal towns in America.
Deborah and James told me that understanding what people look for in leaders means stepping away from national politics.
For a good, Jim, 2.5, 3 years, we didn't talk national politics at all.
Our premise was always, tell us what is the story of Sioux Falls. You know, why are people moving here? Why are they leaving? What's getting better? What's getting worse? How are the schools? What kind of industries do you have here? And partly it was because that's what we were interested in, but also we learned over time that the very least enlightening thing you can possibly do when going to a town in America is what 99% of our colleagues do, which is say, how do you feel about Trump? You know, do you like Hillary? How crooked is she? Because there's two things wrong with that. One is nothing they can say will be surprising in any way. It's just what you've seen from talk shows. And number two, it shrinks all the dimensions of their life to this just flattened grid of Trump versus Hillary 2 years ago or Obama after that. And the actual life there is so much richer and more complicated and generally more positive.
Well, and the other narrative, certainly post-2016, was in the middle of America, it is one of two things, a hollowed out hellscape where industry has fled, the global economy has left people behind, and or two, that these are people who are angry and frustrated at the elites who have left them behind, and they're here to take their country back.
So Deb is from there. So you're from Ohio. So I'll give my not from Ohio. I'm from sort of a version of the Midwest that happens to be in California, from interior California, which was a town called Redlands. This was settled by people back in the Dust Bowl era. They would come, you know, from the South and Midwest, and before that from the Northeast. So on the hellscape front, what we saw, we went to places that had had a lot of problems, you know, like Erie, Pennsylvania, which has had all of its deindustrialization, and places in the Dakotas, which were dealing with drought, and San Bernardino, California, which has a zillion problems. And everybody was aware of the problems they had. And the thing which mainly struck us in contrast to the national mood is that most places, most people felt as if they were moving in a good rather than bad direction. It wasn't a sinking ship with everybody sort of shooting all survivors. It was awareness of problems from opioids to new industries. You know, in Mississippi, we're in Kentucky, all of so it didn't seem like a hellscape unless you asked, who do you hate more of the national candidates? Then you could get this hellscape rhetoric.
And the idea of seething anger out there was nothing that came to our awareness or consciousness until it seemed to be kind of conjured up in the national scene and in the quote national conversation. When we'd go to towns, people weren't waiting around for the government to do something great for them or to bail them out if things were bad or to even create something new if things were kind of okay. They were acting from their local needs and experience and assets to take charge and make things happen in a way that would help solve some of their problems, like the mill closed or the mine closed, and do it on terms that made sense for where they were locally and where they could individually have an impact in whatever they chose to act on, sense of power locally.
The way I try to reconcile these things is to say, at the national level, I think we're in a genuine time of crisis. That there has not been a national leader like the one we have now before, and that many of the worst eras in American political history, notably the late 1800s, were recapitulating now. So there is a national problem that really merits first-order attention. Simultaneously, you have the parts of the country that are not directly affected by national politics are in a period of renewal, experimentation, reinvention, diverse possibilities around the country. And I think the main historical model from which I try to draw consolation is the late 19th, early 20th centuries, sort of the seeds of the progressive and populist era, where you also had bad national politics sometimes. And you had these people all across the country with the women's movement and the the suffrage movement and the environmental movement and the black rights movement, all these things. And so I am hoping that in this struggle between paralysis at the top and reinvention at the bottom, the reinventing forces can be given more airtime.
So overall, do you think that we are in a crisis of leadership in this country?
On which level?
That's it. That's what I'm saying. So the narrative is there's a crisis of leadership at the national level. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I don't know that there may be a frustration, at least I'm hearing that too, that the people who could come and solve it, who have leadership traits, don't want to engage in it.
Because, you know, who would really want to run for Congress right now? I hope and pray that talented people do, but it's a challenging thing to prospect. But again, I'm not in the prediction business, but I will predict this. We've seen so many young mayors and business leaders and librarians and NGO people of all races, both genders, every sort of background you want, even different generations, but mainly young, who embody this sense of we're better than the national politics of this moment. And I think that one of these people or several of them will appear, you know, maybe not 2 years from now, maybe 6 years from now, and this person's story will have an effect as presidential candidates do appear. Jimmy Carter, for whom I worked, appeared out of nowhere. Obama, in a different way, appeared in 2004 out of nowhere. Somebody will appear and people say, yes, that's what we've been looking for, somebody who has that story, that voice.
On the local level, I think there's a surplus of leadership. And you never quite know. When we went into Eastport, Maine, or St. Mary's, Georgia, who were the leaders there? They could be teachers. They could be the mayor. They could be business people, founding fathers. There was no definition of who the leader would be. But it was someone who saw the potential of their community and had enough charisma or standing to rally people around into action and to get people to follow. And it wasn't necessarily just a leader. It might have been a group of leaders, like the millennials in San Bernardino, California, who are really driving a new civic engagement. How that translates into state representation and national government, I'm not sure. It's funny. I didn't get the sense that people who were the leaders locally were positioning themselves politically for a step up, whether they'll feel that obligation once they have traction where they are, or, you know, they'll time out as mayor and think, what's next? There are a lot of ways that could happen.
Deb Fallows, Jim Fallows, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Amy. Yeah.
Deborah Fallows is a linguist and contributor to The Atlantic. James Fallows is a national correspondent for The Atlantic. Their book is called Our Towns, A 100,000-Mile Journey into the Heart of America. More on American Leadership tomorrow.